You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Mark Leibovit, editor and publisher of the Leibovit VR newsletters, also known as VRTrader.com. He's speaking to us from Arizona. Welcome back to the show and best of the season, Mark.
Same to you, Jim. Thank you. Happy holidays. Happy Hanukkah and Merry Christmas. Of course, we're a little early, but they both start on the 25th, so we're pretty close. So thank you.
Well, let's look at it as the 12 days of Christmas. Mine started with my birthday and just continue on. Let's make it all year.
That sounds good to me.
Uh-huh. Mark, do we have a special offer for our listeners?
Yeah, let's give them the 50% off offer for new subscribers. And that's to Leibovit VR newsletters, but the acronym to get to the website is VRTrader.com. And you'll see a bunch of newsletters up on the screen. We're going to be changing the webpage and updating a little bit in early January, but for the most part, you have a nice selection there. And if you choose one of them or more of them, you can take a half off using the promo code 2022 half off, 2022 half off. And I also normally make that disclosure around this time where, you know, I'm used to be, but no longer a financial advisor, nor do I provide financial advice, but we do publish our newsletter as we have since, believe it or not, 1979.
Wow. That's a while. Well, up until the time of this interview, the Dow had 10 days of decline, something not seen since 1974. A bit of a bounce back on Thursday. Is this a warning sign for the stock markets?
You know, that's really an interesting time because that was one of the worst periods of the U.S. stock market. If I recall correctly, it was the fall of 1974 where the Dow got as low as 700 or 680 or some incredibly low number. And everybody thought about recession, depression, end of the world. I mean, there was a lot of discussion at that time. Of course, the Dow hadn't been much higher than I think 1,000 or 1,100 anyway prior to that, but that was considered really negative, and it turned out to be the bottom. So when you start comparing to 1974 and a series of down days, of course, we're not having a new lows or anything like we did back in 74, but, you know, it sort of says that maybe we're being set up for another rally at some point. So we'll see if that all plays out. But I've been warning about the market as many others have. You still see names like, you know, Apple Computer going to new highs in recent days. And still, even though Warren Buffett has sold a lot of the stock, he still owns some. So I guess he's still happy about the shares he still owns. But got a couple names. And Tesla, of course, was really the star in the last couple weeks. Nearly got to $500 or $500 a share, which was an all-time high. And not too many weeks or months back, stock, you know, was way down there, you know, and they thought the company was having problems and they weren't selling enough Teslas and all kinds of, you know, supply chain issues and on and on and on. And here it is, you know, the faith in, I guess, good timing, Elon Musk and the state of the world turned things around dramatically. So it made him even richer than he had been. But that personal faith in him and the company has always been strong, and, you know, basically because of his innovations and creativity and so forth, forgetting any of the political connections that he recently has. But getting back to your Dow question, it's funny because it's a big divergence. You know, you have NASDAQ holding up, and names like Apple and Tesla in there, and the Dow itself underperforming. What was really underperforming was the Dow Transportation Average, which really has been in a cellar coming down recently. And there's the old Dow theory, you know, going back to Charles Dow and the creation of the Dow Jones Average, that you want to see the averages, all the indices in sync. And he's got the three. You've got the Dow Utilities, which no one really pays much attention to, the Dow Industrials that you just referred to, and the Dow Transportation Average. And generally, the Dow Transports are considered to be a leader. And when you think about it, it makes a lot of sense because, you know, if products are being shipped and transportation is being heavily used. That's a good sign that the economy is doing well and there's a lot of commerce and so forth. Of course, the Dow Transportation Average incorporates, you know, airlines, railroads, you know, and companies like shipping companies like UPS and Federal Express and so forth. So it's a little mix of companies, but FedEx and UPS haven't been doing that well. So, you know, this all ties to the fact that we've been in a recession that nobody's talking about. Consumers have been spending less money. Things have been tight. And when you see the market at all-time highs and you see Donald Trump being elected, which, you know, ultimately should be a big positive, it sort of masks the reality out there that things really aren't that good. So the Dow Transport's been coming down, and didn't surprise me that Dow Industrials broke because the transports have been doing poorly. So we just have to see how it plays out. You want to see that transports take off, and it may not do it so fast. We'll see into next year. And the other part of it is, you know, even though some of the, you know, high-tech names, you know, investors have been mesmerized by AI and Apple Computer and Meta and Google and Netflix and, you know, the handful of hot stocks. And, you know, when they come into the market, they first think about those names. You know, they don't necessarily think about the whole Dow Industrial. They just think about the hot names, even though the Apple is now part of the Dow. It just distorts things quite a bit. So, you know, when you think about it, you know, the market is high, and for the most part, you know, some smart people, maybe money managers, have decided, gee, we've had a pretty good year. Let's ring the register. You know, these money managers do well. You know, they're paid, you know, I don't know how each individual one is paid, but generally quarterly they're evaluated. And if you're sitting on a big profit and there's a risk that it's going to be a big sell-off or a crash or whatever, you would want to get out of your portfolio and lock in your position. You get compensated based on performance, and if not performance, you want to keep your job. So if all those profits are lost, you know, why not start selling in November, December, and increase your cash position? So I think that probably is part and parcel to it. The original thought that most of them were talking about is, gee, they're going to wait to January to do it because they can defer taxes, and maybe individual investors might consider that, but some other individual investors might also want to sell too for the same reason the money managers. So there are a lot of cross currents and forces here. I mean, greed gets to a certain level, and if you think everybody's going to sell January for tax purposes, why don't you start selling in December and beat it to the crowd? And, you know, we had that 1,000-point decline. We're recording this on Thursday, yesterday, Wednesday, and the market was still a little uneasy today. And then you got in the news background, as you know, the debt ceiling in the U.S. Congress and whether they're going to pass it or not pass. It's like every 10 minutes is a news story there. A lot of geopolitical news and stuff going on out there. And I suppose the optimists are saying, where is Santa Claus? I thought we're supposed to have a big Santa Claus rally, and suddenly you get a 1,000-point decline in the Dow on Wednesday. So that sort of shook up some of the elves at the North Pole, I would think. So maybe, you know, they'll still try to, you know, there's the plunge protection team out there, which nobody talks about, that Ronald Reagan created, and the equity stabilization fund, a lot more market manipulation. So maybe they'll try to rally it into Christmas or slightly after anyway. But, you know, damage has been done. You know, you got an overbought market. You know, you've got Dow Transport's underperforming. You have a recession that's underway, and it's going to become, I think, more pronounced next year. There's going to be a lot of government layoffs, people quitting the government because of Trump's involvement, and a lot of the employment figures and numbers were distorted in 2024 because a good part of the hiring was government hiring, so that distorted the job numbers. So in the real world, people being laid off. So things aren't that good. You know, it's nice to have a high stock market if you're in the market, and that's great, and sort of impervious to the real world if you're in the market trading or investing in the market. But the real world is not as great as the market has said. So we have some problems. We'll see what happens into the end of the year, early next year. I'm more on the bear side. I think market's overdone, and I think, you know, it could be a bigger sell-off into the first quarter next year. We'll see. Maybe some of the inactions that Donald Trump makes first couple of weeks of the year, you know, maybe he'll help the market short term. But, you know, he doesn't have the power immediately to make these changes. I think if they were able to actually cut income tax and do a lot of stuff that he's talking about, open up the valve on the oil and gas industry, you know, reverse a lot of the changes that Biden and it's the crazies that work with him that had made, then, you know, that eventually have some positives. But and I guess we have to be optimistic in that sense. But, you know, we take the market day to day, week to week here, and I don't want to get too carried away because, you know, you get a sharp sell off and then there could be enough of an oversold condition that we start getting another rally underway again. But the Dow sold off, and I think it's part because it was being led by the transports, the reality of what's going on in the world. And, of course, you know, a big part of the Dow is United Healthcare. As we know, the CEO got shot. Stock's been underperforming, that very expensive stock. When that drops 20, 30 points, it weighs very heavily in the Dow Industrials itself. I think it's 6 or 7 points for every in the Dow for every point in the stock moves. So that put a little bit of a, you know, shebang on the Dow Industrials when a big component of it gets nailed that way. So there's been, you know, some issues there. So I hope I answered your question.
The Fed has said instead of cutting interest rates 4 times next year, they anticipate doing it twice. Is that taken as bad news for the market?
Well, my headline in my newsletter was what is the top creature of the creature from Jekyll Island going to do, referring, of course, to the Edward Griffin book, The Creature from Jekyll Island, which described the creation of the Federal Reserve. It's a 500-page document that's decades old that essentially calls for the abolishment of the Federal Reserve. It's just nonsense, and I keep bringing the subject up, and nobody really wants to talk about it. Instead of asking, you know, like I said, Powell, when you're going to resign, the question I would ask in the audience is, when do you think we should abolish the Fed and move on with our lives, since you've been so incompetent for the last 100 years or more, causing more recessions and problems than you help create? And as Ben Bernanke stated back in 2008-09, stating, in fact, that the Federal Reserve helped precipitate the Great Depression by raising interest rates at a time when they shouldn't have raised interest rates. So it's just a totally inept institution. Everybody asks me, you're asking me a question, a quarter point, half point, it's all BS. It means nothing. They're behind in terms of economic forecasting. Whoever they use are the biggest, I don't want to use idiots, but misinformed people that you could possibly have making those, and they're always lagging in terms of their, you know, their acknowledgement of real world issues. And the institution is corrupt for a lot of reasons. It does a lot of things that we're not publicly supposed to talk about, you know, like buying stocks and companies and helping manipulate the market and moving their money supply up and down, which does a lot of things. I know Paul Volcker, when he was the Fed chairman, he was very aggressive with the money supply situation in the sense that he pulled it back. Powell hasn't done that. So by keeping the money supply rolling along, it's not exploding, but it's not coming down either. That doesn't help the market in terms of the economy to slow down. If you really want to slow down, that's what Paul Volcker did. Not only did he raise rates, but he pulled back the money supply, created a credit crisis, and that really knocked the stuffings out of the economy at the time when we had an inflation back there in 1980. So he's really not doing what he says he wants to do. And there are a lot of political reasons for that. And so it's sort of stagflation out there. In other words, you're not really getting what you want. And he had no real control of the inflation anyway. And they claim they do. And the truth is the inflation numbers that we're hearing are not real. A lot of other researchers have pointed out that it's several points higher, and it really hasn't come down to where they're telling us it's come down. And maybe they realize that, but they're not saying it. So there's so much nonsense here, Jim, you know. Yeah, the market came down supposedly because they're not acknowledging that they're going to lower it more next year, and there's not going to be 4 or 5 cuts, and the market so supposedly got disappointed. Well, if they lower it, it's irrelevant. We have to really look at the bond market. The bond market is the real market. The Fed is just the short-term rate, the discount rate. The bond market has been going down. In fact, right after when he lowered the half point, if you remember a few weeks ago, the bond market, which is the long-term bonds, they immediately collapsed. And when the bonds go down, that means rates go up. So whatever the Fed did was irrelevant. So until the bond market believes there's really a turn in interest rates or money supply or the economy, the whole list of items, it's just a bunch of nonsense, whether he cuts a quarter or quotes a half or says he's going to cut it or not cut it. And I'm just wondering if he had acknowledged, gee, 4 or 5 cuts next year, we're really going to bring it down, how the bond market would have reacted to that. That'd be curious if the bond market would have liked that or not liked it. But I think the bond market just reflecting the reality of what's going on. So you got to watch that bond market, the 30-year bond, the long-term bond, and see what they're doing. And if they start rallying, that means things are getting better and rates are coming down. The real world rates, not the Fed rate, which is just intra-bank and that kind of nonsense. So we're just going to have to watch the markets and see what happens into the first half of next year and see how the real bond market acts. But I wouldn't be so surprised if Jay Powell resigns or is asked to resign or forced out. And whoever they put in there probably just as incompetent. I mean, I used to joke back in the 1980s when Alan Greenspan was running the Fed, and I wrote about this, and others have copied it over the years. I used to compare him to a New York taxi cab driver, where you would be slamming on the brakes or slamming on the accelerator, and raising rates, lowering rates back and forth, very indecisive about direction, and just crazy people running the Fed. And that's why I say it shouldn't exist. I think G. Edward Griffin and the Creature from Jekyll Island book is a real story. Nobody really wants to talk about it. And there are a lot of stories related to it, including the fact that when it was created, the individual banks in this country owned shares in the Federal Reserve, which is a private, non-governmental, it's a corporate, federally chartered, but it's a private corporation doing its own thing, and a lot of erroneous and potentially illegal activities, clandestine activities, I guess a better description. And the question is, okay, Mark, we're going to abolish the Federal Reserve. What do we do then? Well, do we really need a central bank? Why don't we rely on the free market to determine interest rates? We rely on the free market to determine stock prices, valuation of companies, where investment is going. And suddenly the private equity market, became in love with nuclear, which has been out of favor, as you know, for longest time. And you mentioned nuclear to anybody, they would shun away from you. Worst thing in the world now, the world's rushing toward nuclear, mini reactors, big reactors, because they need energy for AI and so forth. Well, it was the private sector that made that happen. And the same thing would happen if you got rid of the Federal Reserve. The private sector, for the bond markets and so forth, will determine where rates really should be. And you don't need a government authority, which has mismanaged it forever. So that's why I had my headline in my newsletter about what the head creature from the Creature of Jekyll Island was going to do. And obviously, I'm sure his quarter point story or whatever he said wasn't well received by many people. They didn't get what they wanted, but like I say, even if they did, it probably would have made no difference anyway.
We'll have more with Mark Leibovit right after this.
Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclico's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclico Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Mark Leibovit. Mark, what's the story with gold?
They throw the baby out with the bathwater is the best explanation I could give you. You know, I've mentioned before that, you know, we had a sort of a target in gold, and, you know, there was a period of time where it can go into a correction. Everybody exuberant about it. I mean, look how many years we waited for it to break out above 2000, finally did, but we suffered through a lot of pullbacks along the way. Seasonality is on the side of gold. I mean, if you look at history, generally between, I think, now and mid-February is supposed to be a strong period, so maybe we'll still get another rally. And I'm, you know, big picture positive. It's just that, you know, when stocks start coming down or people start liquidating assets, everything gets sold off, and I think gold fell into that category. It sold off with the stock market. But after February, the seasonality sort of plays out, and we'll just see what happens. You know, a lot of things in geopolitical world and stuff could change things overnight, yet I do have higher targets ultimately. I think my next target is 3,200, then 3,700, and so forth, but I don't know when. It could be 5 years from now. It could be 6 months from now. You got to watch the charts. So short-term, it just reflected the movement of money, and, you know, when things get tight, markets start coming down. You don't always see gold as an inverse play. You know, many, even during the crash in 87, for example, you saw the gold come down when the stock market came down. So it's not a hedge. You know, it's supposed to be a hedge, but it works in its own universe in its own time. And I'm sure the world is a little disappointed that the BRICS nations didn't really pull anything off in that Russian meeting they had in the last month or two, where everybody was hoping they were going to create that ultimate currency backed by gold, and they were going to value gold at 10,000 an ounce and back a currency by that. Well, none of that happened, even though we know Russia and China are still out there accumulating the stuff, as others are. It's a trading vehicle. That's really what it is, like anything else. And, you know, hold it long enough, you know, it tends to go up, as it has. But, you know, it wasn't too many decades back, you know, in the days of the Great Depression and following that, the last century, you know, where something that was $20-$30 an ounce now suddenly is $2,700 or $2,650 an ounce. So it's gone up quite a bit in the last 100 years, and I suppose in the next 100 years it might do the same percentage wise, and the gold bugs will be happy when it's at some big number. So we're just trading around right now. We'll see what happens with you now in February. I'm not selling my coins that are sitting in the vault. I mean, let's say that I'm holding my coins because they're good looking, they're numismatic, and they're pretty objects. And it's sort of fun to play with it and hold it. And when we see an opportunity, we trade some of the gold ETFs, the inverse ones as well as the bullish ones, and we just trade them according to what the short-term indicators are saying. So there's a big support number. I think it's around 2560, which is a good 100 points below where we are right now. That level pretty much has to hold, just looking at the charts here for a moment. I'm not saying it's going to get there, but if it gets under that 2560 level and it drops more than another 100, then you might see 2200, 2300. So we'll see, you know, if that even occurs. But just got to watch the charts and see how it acts. So if it doesn't muster enough strength between now and February to start taking out that 2800 level, then you might see it under that 2560 or go lower for a while before it attempts another big push to the upside.
What's the story for the crude market?
Well, seasonally, we're due for a low here. In fact, one sector that I like, it's really cheap, is natural gas. It's been horsing around here at the bottom for a few months, and it's showing some buying interest. You know, there was some talk that Trump was going to change the natural gas, the LNG guidelines. I know Biden is doing just the opposite because they're completely off base in terms of, you know, what the market should be doing or not doing. They're playing around with it, trying to tie it down, and now not permitting exports and so forth. But that's why it's showing some life here, because they know Trump's going to get behind it come January 20th. So it's looking sort of interesting. But in terms of the general comment about oil, yeah, you generally get some type, and again, these seasonalities, nothing is 100%. I use them all the time as guidelines, but you generally get a low sometime in December in the oil market, and whether it's a big low or a nice trading low. So they've really been coming down here, and there should be a buying opportunity. So what you got to do is look for a reversal pattern on the charts or some news story that triggers that, and then we should get some type of seasonal push. The other comment that I do want to make that we talked about before is, if, you know, Trump really opens up the spigots on oil, allows all these licenses to be renewed and open drilling to occur, and none of these restrictions that have been put on oil since Biden got into the White House and his cohorts over there, you're going to have more supply on the market. So it's going to help the companies produce more oil, and they seem to be profitable, making money even at current levels, because even companies like Chevron and Exxon were showing some nice profits this past year, even though oil really wasn't that high. So maybe opening the spigots, you know, is okay for the companies in terms of production and so forth and making money, but I don't know if it means oil has to go up. You know, maybe it hangs around $60 or $70 a barrel because of all this new production. So it's really interesting to see if world demand is going to change or some other event's going to trigger some reason why oil should explode, you know, and go back up again in a big, big way. And that's something, you know, we just can't predict, but we should be looking at a bounce here, I think, you know, due about any time. So let's keep an eye on it.
Cryptocurrencies, after skyrocketing, Bitcoin has pulled back. What's your feeling there?
I'm a little bearish, honestly. I just think it's up too much. You know, I come from a trading background. I mean, you know, there's some predictions now it's going to $120,000. And I don't discount that's impossible. But as I mentioned in my previous broadcasts, you know, I want to see it back at 73,000. I want to see that was the breakout level. So I want to see it drop nicely here and provide a buying opportunity, whether we get it or not. But that's where if I already own it and I'm in it at $30,000 or $20,000 and I've been in it for a few years and I'm really thinking it's going to $1 million, like some people believe, you know, I wouldn't do anything about it. But if you're not in, unless you just want to take a tiny little position, you got to be aware there is technical risk back to that about in the 73,000 level. So that's a nice drop if we get it, and it may not happen. But that's sort of my comment about it. I'm not so happy about paying $105,000 for it if I haven't already been in the market trading it. So I'm sort of a little bearish.
Apart from Santa's sleigh zipping through the sky Christmas Eve, anything happening on the geocosmic front?
Yeah, we got the winter solstice. And it's funny, remember I talk about how the market changes direction around the solstices and the equinoxes? And people will look at me like, hey, you're crazy. Well, did the market just change the direction here a little bit the last few days? You know, it happens within a couple of weeks of the equinoxes and the solstice. The big dramatic one, of course, was the March low in 2020 on the COVID story. And that was right akin to the vernal equinox, which I think was March 20, 21st at the time. So I always watch these dates, and we're in that change of direction point time frame. So it didn't surprise me that the Dow had its worst 10 days, you know, since 1974, and the transports have been underperforming, and market starts to get a little tired or sloppy here. So it's sort of been coincident with a market top, and it sort of warned you, hey, your market's been rallying into November, December, and you got this winter solstice coming up, and it tends to be an overlap change of directions in the market sometimes, and you see where you are in the market. Are you overbought? Are you oversold? And if you're way up there and everybody's euphoric, maybe you got to watch your back. That things might be changing. So that's the big story in terms of the geocosmic.
Mark, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
My guest has been Mark Leibovit, editor and publisher of the Leibovit VR Newsletters, also known as VRTrader.com. He was speaking to us from Arizona. If you have any questions for Mark or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@HowStreet.com. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.